the road must have a code that you can live by, and so become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well, their father's hell did slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams, the one they picked, the one you know by.
Hello, this is your host for Education Now, Athena Melville. In this May 2016 edition, I welcome Philip Cantor, Master and Mentor in Education in Chicago, who has been a frequent guest, most recently in April of 2016, just before the Chicago one-day teacher strike. So now Phil teaches biology and psychology at North Grant High School. It's a neighborhood school in Chicago's West Humboldt Park neighborhood. He has a master's degree in education policy and is currently a NOICE master teaching fellow with Project SEEEC. That's an S and three E's and a C, which means Science Education for Equity and Excellence in Chicago, and a doctoral candidate at the University of Illinois at Chicago. He is on the leadership team of Teachers for Social Justice in Chicago. And I welcome back, Phil. It is just always a pleasure to have you as a guest on the show.
Likewise. Thanks. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, as I just said, and you heard in the introduction, the last time I had you on was just before the Chicago Teachers Union went on that one-day strike in April. So what was that about?
So we called it Shutdown Shy. The activists that have been in the streets in Chicago, not just teachers, but young people, a lot of young African-American people, have been out protesting police violence and many other things. And one of their refrains has been, you know, what do we want? Justice. If we don't get it, shut it down. And I think we sort of picked up on that and said, you know what, this is serious. We need education justice as well as justice in the criminal justice system and in the economic system. And that one-day strike was not just the CTU. It was not just the Chicago Teachers Union. There were activists from many, many groups. There were probably about 30 to 40 different groups involved, including Black Lives Matter and the Black Youth Project, BYP 100, and another group called Asada's Daughters, and people fighting for a higher minimum wage, the Fight for 15. There were faculty and students from Chicago State University and from Northeastern Illinois University and from the University of Illinois at Chicago, and mental health advocates, nurses, parents, students, just a variety of different workers out there supporting us as well. Trying to tie the issues together. It wasn't just a teacher strike that day. It was sort of as close as we get to a general strike here in the United States. It was really an effort to say, we need economic justice, we need racial justice, and we need education justice. We're not going to just put up with what's been going on, which has been eroding all three of those things recently. The state of Illinois is having a funding crisis. We cut our income tax when the new governor came into office, and it wasn't just him, it was previous governors who sort of set this up and the legislature. But so our income tax in Chicago actually dropped at a time when our needs are high, our infrastructure is crumbling, schools are underfunded, et cetera, right? So that pushed us into a deeper crisis, along with decades of underfunding the teachers' pensions, which I know I've talked about before, which has put the district in a financial crunch now. So the state has been working without a budget. So the state of Illinois has not had a budget for over 10 months. So they've paid exactly $0 toward higher education in the last 10 months. They've paid exactly $0 to many of the nonprofit organizations that give services to the lowest income people in the city.
So,
or in the country. So yeah, did you hear that? Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, so you would say that strike was successful.
The strike was incredibly successful. So it unified us. It brought many groups together. And after that strike, the state actually did give funding to Chicago State University, which is a school on the south side of Chicago. It's the university that has produced more African-American teachers than any other school in the state. It educates more African-American students than any school in the state. It's as close as we have to, like, a historically black college or university in Illinois. And it was threatened with closing. They laid off over 300 people. It would have been an incredible loss for the African-American community and for the Chicago public schools and for Chicago in general. I mean, it's ridiculous. So I think our shutdown shy event on April 1st really pushed the state, and it made people aware of these issues, and it built unity among teachers and among a lot of the other people who were involved. It showed our resolve that we were willing to go on strike. The Chicago Public Schools has threatened to sue the teachers union, saying that it was an illegal strike, and they, Governor Rauner, our governor's labor relations board that he appointed did call it an illegal strike. So apparently we went on an illegal strike, but we knew that was a possibility, and there were no real ramifications for that. We were just, basically it was a one-day strike. We were not planning to extend it anyway. But I also think it was successful in that it showed our strength. So it may have actually helped us prevent a long multi-day strike during the school year. So I think it was successful in a variety of ways.
Yes, I think it's so impressive that families were there with you, parents and children and members of the community. It wasn't just the teachers. That's just so wonderful. And, that's really happening in a lot of places. But let's go on. So that's great. So there was some controversy about one of the speakers at the rally who ended her speech with some pretty aggressive criticism of the police. What are your feelings about that?
Yeah, so there were some amazing speeches at the beginning of the rally. And one of the last speeches was this amazing young African-American activist named Paige May. She started a group called Asada's Daughters, which has been fighting for justice in Chicago. Her speech was incredible.
What is the organization is called again now?
It's called Asada's Daughters, named after a political prisoner, actually, in Cuba, named Asada. I can send you that information if you want to put a link on your site so people can find out more about this.
Oh,
I'd
sure.
be happy to do that.
Sure, that would be great.
Yeah, so she gave this great speech, which really tied a lot together, the issues of policing in our schools. Every high school in Chicago pretty much has two full-time police officers in it.
And no librarians.
And no librarians. Most schools have no librarians, and most schools don't have enough counselors, and most schools share a psychologist with another school or two. It's ridiculous. And the police tend to escalate situations with students. They don't really understand how to deal with young people. At best, they sit there doing nothing and waste a huge amount of funds that could be spent on our students with things like psychologists and counselors and librarians and teachers and teachers' aides. And at worst, they push kids into the criminal justice system who shouldn't be there. So you know, Paige was talking about those issues. She was talking about the shooting of Laquan McDonald here, which happened in Chicago recently, and the covering up of that event, and many other things. And she's been fighting for schools as well, her organization has. And at the end of her speech, she got very emotional, and she said, you know, F the police, and maybe a couple of other things like in that vein. It was very controversial, but part of it may have been she was responding. At some point, somebody in the crowd yelled something out when Karen Lewis was speaking, the head of the Chicago Teachers Union, and Karen Lewis responded to that person, "The police are not our enemies." And then after Karen Lewis spoke is when Paige May spoke. So I think she might have been responding a bit to Karen Lewis's desire to try to say, you know, the police are not our enemies, we need to try to work with them. But I think Paige's point is that for people in the black community, primarily in Chicago, the police have not been our friends and have not been their friends, and they are afraid of the police, and they don't feel like they're served by the police. And, you know, historically that's been true in Chicago. We've had the city has actually paid about $500 million in settlements to people for police misconduct cases in the past couple of years. $500 million, right? That money could fund our schools, right?
Right.
The police need to stop abusing people. So I think my feeling is, I would have maybe phrased it differently, or hoped that Paige might have phrased it differently to avoid a controversy that could divide our movement. I think what she was saying was absolutely solid. Like, I think we really need to address the issue of police in our schools and policing in our communities, and we need to, a huge amount of our city's budget goes to policing when it really should go to education and jobs and things that actually make the community safer.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that's, I know here in California they spend more housing a prisoner, I mean, three times as much as they do on a student, you know, in public school.
Absolutely, and now prisons are being privatized across the country.
Right.
Right. So there's actually for-profit prison companies, and there are companies. There was a scandal here in Illinois where the company that was allowing prisoners to make phone calls home, they could make, you know, collect calls, were charging outrageous sums. It was costing $40 or $50 to make a phone call, which, you know, on your cell phone costs basically nothing.
Right.
Right. So there's just a lot of abuse of that system, and a lot of people making money off it, and a lot of politicians, you know, making themselves look tough on crime, and it really is destroying lives. And so many of our students have parents incarcerated. It's ridiculous.
It's magnified there in Chicago, and it's magnified in areas in Los Angeles, but it's really happening everywhere.
Yeah.
The racism. I was having a discussion with someone I respect the other day, and they were saying, well, really, you know, the anti-feminism today in the United States is just extreme. And I said, well, it is extreme, but I think racism is more extreme. You know, it doesn't, more or less, whatever. But I do see so the escalation of racism in our culture, and it's just been increasing and increasing and increasing since the 80s, and to a point where there's a whole generation that doesn't even know what it was like before. And that breaks my heart. And they can't really find out because of what they're doing to public education. What they're doing to public education, which also started in the 80s, and they seem to be succeeding. And I see right now there's a turning point, because parents are involved because of the opt-out and the parent strike, and because of courageous actions by people like the Chicago Teachers Credit Union and the teachers in Seattle and in some other places too that are really mobilizing. And they're mobilizing, and I heard Amy Goodman speak today in an interview, and she was saying this mobilization, you know, started way back with Occupy, and it's mm-hmm. just, you know, it's just caught fire, and Bernie Sanders is sort of a, you know, he's sort of a representative of that. It's sort of, you know, a lot of the same people gravitate that way, and a lot of the same, you know, it's just critical in our country right now. It's just critical, and so.
It is. I completely agree with you. And I mean, I don't think we have to compete to see which is worse, racism or anti-feminism or anti-trans sentiments. And I mean,
right.
There's so much hate to go around. There's so many people taking advantage of ignorance and hate. It's crazy, but I completely agree with you. I mean, I think it's sort of important that these things are coming to the surface, and that is helping people unify and build movements, not just to fight for against what we don't want. We don't want racism. We don't want sexism. We don't want homophobia. We're also looking to what we do want.
Right? Yes.
We want holistic education.
Yes.
We want a criminal justice system that helps people, you know, avoid getting into the criminal justice system.
Yes.
It's not just about punishment and sentences. We want schools that are going to, you know, really help people become self-actualized, not just become cogs in a corporate machine. I absolutely agree. I think that the other leg of the stool is the environmental movement and climate change. You know, hopefully these will come together. I know there was protests here in northern Indiana, right outside Chicago over the weekend, and also in Seattle and a variety of other countries, cities pushing back against climate change and our reliance on fossil fuels. And these things all really are related and can go together.
Yes, I think they do. I think I see that. I see that. I see that everywhere. And that gives me great hope, but I feel like it's just critical right now, because if it's, you know, let's get back to Chicago. I could go on and on, but I do see this. I do see people mobilizing everywhere, and I do see people criticizing the movement and comparing, you know, and talking about masses, you know, and you know, sure, it's terrible if the masses do what they did in Germany, you know, Second World War, and that certainly is what everyone sees when they see Trump, but it's a completely different story, you know, if it's mm-hmm. Bernie Sanders, and to me, that's like the Beatles, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, that's a good mania. You know, that's a wonderful mania.
It is. I agree. And I mean, don't take this the wrong way, but I think some people who are supporting Trump actually are doing so because they're fed up with a really corrupt system, right? I mean, there are people who see Trump as somebody who breaks through the BS and is going to, you know, so while there are plenty of people supporting Trump because of his racist dog whistles and white supremacy and Make America Great Again ridiculousness, I think we sort of have to take seriously that so many people have supported him for some of the same reasons that people support Bernie. I mean, it's sort of a weird, like, negative universe or something, but I think it's all part of the same thing. People are realizing how corrupt our system is and how little the people actually have a say in anything that happens.
Right. I do agree with you that people who feel disenfranchised are supporting Bernie, and they're supporting, and some of them are supporting Trump. However, those that feel disenfranchised that are supporting Bernie, I don't see them as racists.
Oh no, absolutely not.
No, I don't see them as you know, anti-feminists. Opposed to the LGBT community. And
right.
Or Bible bangers. Evangelical Christians.
I really agree.
And so, right. They say, well, the KKK and he's drawing the same people, I'm like, look, the KKK didn't like Jews either. What is Bernie? Wake up and smell the coffee. Stop feeding, that's the fear that's being fed to you.
I agree. Yeah, Trump, very, very fear-based. Which could bring us back to Chicago, because a lot of our leadership here kind of leads through fear, or tries to, and it's not working terribly well. They have, I think Rahm Emanuel's, our mayor's approval ratings are incredibly low, maybe, 12% or something like that of the people actually think he's doing a good job. It's a little, I see them all connected. Bruce Rauner, our governor in Illinois, Rahm Emanuel, our mayor, definitely more in the billionaire who thinks they know how to run everything class, as opposed to the, politician of the people for the people.
Right. That's the other thing when people, start yelling about, oh, socialism, when they're talking about socialism, I'm like, what? Your taxes pay for your schools. They pay for your infrastructure. They pay your teachers. They pay your police. Don't you understand? Of course you don't, because you've been kept in ignorance and you've been fed these lies, it's just, and of course the media, I'm going to stop and get back to Chicago. So can you give us an update, or do you feel you have, of what it's like in the Chicago public schools?
Sure. Things have, we're out of the frying pan and into the fire now. It looks like there won't be a strike this year, partly because of the strength we showed on April 1st. We showed that we were still united and ready to fight and ready to strike, even if it was an illegal, quote-unquote, strike. But CPS has been cutting budgets all year. So, like my school, we have about 900 students. When we got our budget at the beginning of the year, they cut about $85,000 from our budget. And it would have been a greater cut, but we had some money sort of in reserve that we had saved from the previous year. So
$85,000
cut. So that's, that could pay for a teacher, that could pay for a counselor, that could pay for lots of computers or books, right? So $85,000 cut. Then a couple of months ago, CPS, the district, told schools that they needed us. They said, we need you each to reach a target for suggested savings. And my principal went back and said, what are you talking about? And they said, well, we need you to, we know we gave you a budget that you've already allocated to things, but we need you to not spend it all. And at the end of the year, we would like you to return a suggested savings amount. And for my school, their suggested savings amount was $318,000. So in addition to the 80, they wanted to take back 318. My principal and our local school council, which is made up of parents and teachers and a community members and a student, the local school council asked the principal to not give back the money to the district. And he felt sort of torn in between the two, and he gave back some money. He set aside about $200,000 now to go back to the district. So we've lost that out of our budget. Now CPS is saying next year's budgets are probably going to be cut by about 20%. The district funds going to schools will be cut by about 20% because they have $1 billion deficit that we need to now make up. So they're going to take that money out of the schools to make up the deficit. So that's what's happening right now in Chicago. So 20% would be a significant, you know, that would be another $800,000 to $1 million out of the school's budget for the year. That would definitely be teaching positions. So my classes are already at about 32 students.
Which is not good.
Which is not good. It's like the highest, we're among the highest class sizes in the state, and it's wrong. It's bad for kids, and everybody knows that. I mean, the mayor sends his kids to schools where, you know, there's about 17 to 20 kids per class, right? And
right.
Why does he think that it's okay for our kids to be in classrooms of 32 kids? So that's what's going on now, and I don't know how we can increase class size. I mean, our rooms are physically not big enough. Teachers obviously can't really teach if they have, you know, I teach five classes of 32 kids. It's, you know, over 150 students, about 160 students. It's really hard to give students the attention they need when you have so many students, when you have so many. If I spend, you know, 3 minutes per paper, you know, assessing student work, and giving students feedback on their work, 3 or 4 minutes, you know, I'm grading that assignment for 16 hours, right?
There is no way. I mean, teachers put in so much more time.
Right.
I know this. Everybody knows it. Parents know it. The kids know it. But, you know.
Right. And so it doesn't make any sense, right? You can't give kids the education they deserve with those kinds of numbers, right? So that's what we're fighting for. Against now,
right?
It's sort of insanity. So
it is insanity, and the lack of recess, and the you know, do they at least have recess? You know,
well, I teach in high school, so we don't have recess. My students do have a full lunch period to have lunch and socialize, so that's nice. Some schools have shortened those, the elementary schools, there was a huge fight and pushback against cutting out recess here in Chicago when the mayor extended our school day. But one thing they did was get many schools, they stopped having teachers supervise recess as part of their duties and hired sort of outside contractors, people who are not certified teachers. So that's been problematic. My own children go to a Chicago public school, and some of the recess monitors really don't, you know, teachers understand how to help students solve conflicts with each other. You know, this is part of what recess is all about, right? Learning how to socialize and share and take turns and, you know, all of those things and you know, not exclude people and not bully and all those things. And so they're putting uncertified teachers in those positions, which is really, you know, it's taken some of, you know, the opportunities that occur during recess and thrown them out the window.
Okay, now I'm gonna ask a question here. That why is the union allowing them to do this? Where are the unions?
Right. So, I mean, that's a good question. I think, I mean, it falls outside the purview of that contract, right? We've been incredibly limited about what we're allowed to negotiate over.
By whom?
By the state legislature. So the Illinois state legislature, even before the 2012 strike that Chicago Teachers Union did, they thought they had prevented us from being able to strike at all with their laws, and we overcame that, but they put all sorts of limitations in place. We are not allowed to bargain over class size. We're not allowed to bargain over things like recess monitors being brought in. I mean, that was never even on anybody's radar. Like, we didn't know to try to get that into the negotiating process because that was, you know, they privatized our janitors. So our schools are dirtier and dirtier, and somebody's making money off that.
Yeah,
right?
Now they
want to privatize the engineers.
This is just begging for a lawsuit. Like, I can't believe there isn't a class action lawsuit by the teachers and parents. You know, against this. I mean, just bring these guys down. This is just hideous. There has to be collusion going on. You know, there has to be some kind of collusion. I don't understand how we can have worked so hard to get unions, to get the ability to, you know, negotiate.
Right, but like I told you, our state has been without a budget for 10 months. The reason it's been without a budget is our governor will not even look at a budget, will not propose a budget, will not pay any of our vendors for the state until the Democratic legislature agrees to his quote-unquote turnaround agenda, which involves letting municipalities each decide if they want to have collective bargaining rights in the public unions. So he wants basically to completely eliminate collective bargaining rights, like Scott Walker did in Wisconsin.
The thing is why should he have a voice? He is not in the union. He is right, not a member of that body.
Right? But he's the governor.
But so, but he's not a member of that body.
He's not suggesting that he gets to negotiate with the union. He wants to eliminate unions.
I know, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. I mean, that's just like, yeah. There is, you know, and this is happening all around the country, just as you said.
Yep.
Now, why can't everyone from all of the, why can't the union get all these teachers and all of these parents from all of these different communities where it's happening all over the country and just fight back? I mean, I just, oh, man.
We're working on it. We had about, 15,000-20,000 people in the street on April 1st.
Right.
I think we're doing it. I mean, I think the Chicago Teachers Union has been at the forefront of this sort of revitalizing union movement and trying to make them more social justice unions and not just trade unions that are just out for their own, right? Because that's been a problem in the past. And one problem is that some of the big trade unions support our mayor and support our governor, and they scratch, it's the old "I'll scratch your back, you scratch mine" model of unions, where as long as we get those contracts to build the new hotel, we don't care that you're stealing money from our schools to build the hotel, right?
Right,
and that's what's going on here. So
what about the national teachers unions, like the ones that said that they were going to support Hillary Clinton without asking the body of members?
Yeah,
I'm
not a huge fan of the big national teachers unions. I mean, they've supported us to some degree, and they've come out to help in a variety of different causes here in Chicago. Randy Weingarten has come out, but I don't really have faith in them. They're not the members. My union is the leadership of my union. These are people who were in a classroom until they took office as leadership of the union.
Right.
Right. These are not professional politicians. They're not attorneys. They are rank and file teachers.
Right.
And they've really turned our union around. And I mean, I think we need to see this across the country. I know people are fighting for it in LA. I know people are fighting for it in New York. And I think that's the model. And if we can build social justice unions, I think there's a chance that we can really unify and fight this. I completely agree with you that it's unacceptable.
It is unacceptable. And what's so bizarre for me is that this could be a national, teachers union, and that it doesn't speak for its members. It speaks for the politics of the day. And so it seems like there needs to be something, a revolution within that system, because they should be representing, especially right now, the teachers have just been so squashed. And now, the teachers' colleges too, in the university system, I'm just terrified. That's the truth, Philip. About public education, all these generations of kids that are not being served, you know, as they should be when we have, you know, child growth and development. We have the models. We've done it before. We have models in other countries. So where's the focus? Where's the media? Where's the national unions who are fighting for our kids? Yeah, I know the teachers are. I see them struggling constantly, and I'm always just amazed that they don't get the support from these large organizations that you're led to believe support them.
Yeah, no, I agree. I find it disappointing as well, but I also feel like, you know, when the union isn't the union you want, you need to take it over.
That's right.
You know, the union is us.
That's right.
And so it's going to be a longer process, right? This is a marathon, not a sprint. I also, you know, I think that, research is now coming around to back what a lot of the teachers have been complaining about in terms of standardized testing, damaging the curriculum, in terms of the need for recess, in terms of the need for arts and music in the schools. You know, I think, you know, as we're pushing back in our little cells around the country, here and there in Massachusetts and in New York and Chicago and San Francisco, and right, I think hopefully, you know, the arc of history will bend toward us. Right? Hopefully things will swing back the other way once people see what's going on. And the hope that I have is that even though the system is chaotic, even though they're cutting our budgets and destabilizing us at every opportunity, most teachers are able to do their damnedest to teach. And we talk to our students. We try to build curriculum that's engaging and that can help them understand what's going on and help them make better decisions. And that's the key. I mean, the reason I'm staying in teaching, I'm still in the classroom, is, you know, I'm very interested in all these other aspects of education. I would love to be in a policy position, you know, working at another level, but where I get my energy, where I get my hope is from my students.
Yes, I understand that completely. And I think any teacher worth their salt would share your enthusiasm and your passion for teaching. I certainly do. And that's the thing, is that, you know, I find so many passionate teachers who are doing such a great, fantastic job, and to see how they're treated, it's really disheartening. And I know that you know, tenure's now, you know, in the, because the more that they privatize, the more that they can, like, get rid of tenure and things.
Yeah.
So I guess what I'm really hoping is that that it just balloons, you know, it becomes this, you know, it just happens, you know, what do you call that when everything just happens all at once, you know, like a big bang?
Yeah, paradigm shift.
A paradigm shift.
Need.
Yes,
yeah.
And then that would be wonderful, because I feel like there are areas where some kids are just sparkling, you know, they're doing really well, but where they're really hurting the most are in those Black and Latino communities and the Native American communities, you know, mm-hmm. people of color, Muslim communities. This is where they're really hurting. And they, I feel like a lot of people are trying to focus on social justice. I know a lot of young people who are focusing on social justice, and they just can't believe what they're seeing, and so that's heartening to me as well.
Absolutely. And I think, again, you know, I keep pointing back to Chicago as the model. Like, I think building relationships between the Black Lives Matter activists and the education activists and the environmental activists, right? These are, we all have common enemies. We all have common hopes. And I'm very excited about that. And I think the more we can sort of show that all of these different struggles are connected and related, the more we can build the unity that it's going to require to change the system.
Right? I think that they are all connected, and that's what's so exciting to me, to hear Amy Goodman reflect that, to hear Noam Chomsky reflect that, that these are all good signs because it's happening everywhere. And, you know, and even though it's not in the media, there's enough of us, and there's enough alternative media or, it says that, I'm hoping that that was not a message that I need to be too concerned about. But anyway, so now I have really been excited about the opt-out movement. I think more and more people are opting their kids out, and I think that that sort of dovetails into what we were talking about before. And what do you think? Do you?
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think opt-out is important. I think, you know, pushing back against the over-reliance and misuse of standardized tests is really important. I think it's been somewhat of a struggle to understand where people are coming from who are very different from each other, right? So, you know, people in Chicago, low-income black schools, those they almost don't have the luxury of being able to opt out. Their fear of having greater budget cuts, because the threat is if 95% of the students don't test, we might get federal budget cuts on our schools. That's a fear. The fear of if you don't have enough students test, we're going to put your school on probation and fire all the teachers.
Right.
There, you know, opt out to some degree is a luxury of those of us with more privilege. So I think, you know, we have to keep that in mind.
Yes, I agree with you.
Yeah, but that said, I think more and more people in lower-income communities are opting out. They see how pointless the tests are. They do want to push back against them. Many students at the school where I teach have been opting out because, you know, they ask us questions. They say, is this test going to affect my grade? And my answer is no, it doesn't affect your grade. Is this test going to help me in some way? I can honestly say, no, not really. I mean, they don't ever give us the data about those tests. Like, it's not like the data is going to help me teach you this year because I'm not going to get it till the summer. And even when they do give us the data, it's not the kind of data that I can use to change my teaching, even though they kind of say that that's what it is, right? So, I mean, I think students and teachers and parents are understanding this. I opted my own children out of almost every test, but there are some tests that they needed to take in order to move on to their next school. So I let them take those tests, right? So if they're high stakes and they affect the student's life, I'm not going to say I'm not going to let you take it, right?
Right.
So it's tricky. So, I think it is important, and I think there's definitely been, like, Chicago has significantly reduced the number of tests since the peak of testing a few years ago. It sort of got insane. I mean, it's still insane, but, you know, we have fewer testing days now than we used to, and I think they're at least paying lip service to the parents who are pushing back. So, and I think that's a huge victory of the opt-out movement, and I think it has to go a lot farther. It's ridiculous to use value-added measures to try to evaluate teachers based on student test scores that were not designed to be used that way. They're completely invalid, but they're still being used because the law says you have to use them.
Right.
You know, it's crazy.
Right, and I see these little babies. You know, it was I sort of felt like by the time Obama woke up and smelled the coffee about the tests, you know, he tried to do something, but then they just kind of wound it around and gave it a different name. You know, and you know, like, I don't think he can do everything, but I think his intention about the testing, you know, was there. I just, in so many ways, I feel like he has been, you know, there's been, he's had a disservice from Rahm Emanuel. He's had a disservice from the people who were running his teaching, Arne Duncan.
Yeah, Arne Duncan.
Yeah, Arne Duncan. It's such a disservice, you know, to him and to us. it's something that we all have to work on. I'm just glad that we're able to have this discussion. I know that my listeners really love your interviews, you know, because you're really, what you're saying about Chicago, people are experiencing, as you said, in New York, in California, you know, in Seattle. Really, it's being experienced everywhere, and more people are waking up. And the Chicago Teachers Union is just a wonderful role model for those people trying to take hold and take some actions regarding public education. And I know that a lot of retired teachers who taught in the public schools are watching very closely. And for some of them, for my dear friends, it was very hard for them to see that the big unions were in collusion. They fought that for a long time, that, you know, no, Athena, you're wrong, you know, until finally they just couldn't deny the evidence. You know, it was right there in front of their faces.
Yeah.
And it was a heartbreaker for them, because they just stuck with it for so very long. Well,
yeah, it's frustrating, but, you know, our local union here was sort of corrupt and not very, I mean, it was not helping. It was playing along with the worst of the reforms, and people got fed up with it and took over the union. And that's what people need to do.
That is what they need to do. That's what I'm saying, you know, that for some retired teachers, it was hard. It was hard. And then for some of them, you know, who would confide in me, you know, like, for instance, about the testing, it was like, well, you know, and so you ask the parents. No, we're not permitted to ask the parents. We're not permitted to ask the parents if they want the child tested or if it's okay, because then, you know, they'll be alert to the fact that they have some power. You know,
right.
it was.
It's tricky. I mean, we're specifically told, you know, we're not to suggest that the students opt out or anything like that. But, you know, our administration has always said, well, if students ask you, you may answer them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is it legal for me to opt out? Yeah.
No, I don't. My question is: Is it
right?
Legal to do something without consulting the parent? No, I would. To me, there's just so many. It just blows my mind.
Right.
Yeah.
They should make parents sign a permission slip to allow their child to take the test.
That's
right. You should have to opt into the test.
That you have to opt. That's right. You should have to opt in. I give my permission for Timmy to be tested using this test.
For 16 hours in the next week.
Yeah. With no breaks. And also, I don't care if my teachers can't go to the bathroom, because there's no one in there with their students, you know.
Right, and if he has special needs, that's okay. We'll give him 22 hours instead of 16. Yeah, ridiculous.
Oh man, it is. Well,
so yeah, we're all fighting.
We're all frightened, but we're all fighting back, right?
Yep.
Yeah, and well, you know, I want to thank you once again for saying that you'd come and do this show with me. I was really looking forward to it and excited. And even though I am concerned, I have a lot of positive feelings that even though I'm scared, this is going to be great, and I want to live to see it. I want to live to see us take our schools back. And so thank your family for sharing you again with me tonight. And if there's anything else you want to add that you feel like our listeners should know.
Oh, I think we covered a lot. I think we covered global issues, local issues, national issues.
Right.
Yeah. I mean,
so can people
you know, stay vigilant and keep this fight going.
Yeah, but I think it's all connected, you know, right now, don't you? Even though we covered, you know, it's in such a broad way, do you feel it's all connected, or am I just...
Absolutely. No, absolutely. And it's connected to the water in Detroit. And in Flint, I mean, it's connected to the bankruptcy in Puerto Rico. It's all connected. It's all part of the same neoliberal takeover of the public sphere. Not to get too philosophical, but that it's all part of that. Right?
It's all part of denial of science and part of denial of, you know, what it means, of the human being, you know.
Of humanity, exactly.
You know, like Citizens United, you know, this... Their whole thing about a corporation's a person, but you aren't, you know, that's a something big to fight about, and it's all connected. Well, once again, thank you so very much. And can we give out your contact information? Do you want to do that or not?
Sure, that's fine. I'm on Twitter at Philip Cantor. It's PhillipCantor. So. At Philip Cantor on Twitter, and I'm on Facebook. It's Philip Cantor. I always use my real name, so I'm easy to get a hold of.
Yeah, you are, and it's great. I enjoy your Facebook page so much, and I thank you again. So I'll say good night and have a good day tomorrow.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Bye bye now.
You are on the road, must have a code that you can live by, and so become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well, their father's hell did slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams, the one they picked, the one you know.